How do you to all of you?
Last week we have covered chapter 9 up to verse number 5. So we must remember that this chapter 9 is linked from the subject matter with chapter 7. Chapter 8 is a devotion chapter, because in chapter 8 Krishna wanted to explain to Arjuna the meaning of Adi Atma, Adi Bhuta, Adi Daiva, etc. And then Krishna explained one method of uniting with the Lord in chapter 8, which we understood to be called as Krama Mukti. That means one who does not have the knowledge of the Supreme Lord, the unmanifest, but one who is endowed with devotion, when such a person dies, goes to Brahma Loka, attains knowledge and then attains moksha. But in chapter 9 now, Krishna comes back to the importance of knowledge. Why he wants to emphasize on knowledge? Because with knowledge of the Supreme Unmanifest Brahman, one can attain this moksha while we are living, which is called Sadyo Mukti. That means while we are living, we attain the state of liberation with this knowledge, and upon death we will get direct liberation. We don't have to go to any other lokas. So the theme in chapter 9 and chapter 7 is very closely linked. Chapter 7 was called Jnana Vijnana Yoga, Yoga of Jnana knowledge, Vijnana wisdom. The same thing again in chapter 9 verse 1, Krishna uses those same words. If you look at verse 1, the third line, chapter 9 verse 1, third line, Jnana Vijnana Sahitam. I am going to give you the knowledge, Jnanam, and then Sahita means together with Vijnana, with wisdom, you will thus attain moksha. So again Krishna is talking about Jnanam. Jnanam means what? Knowing the Lord with form. The Lord that we pray to with form, that is called Jnanam. Knowledge of Lord with attributes, which size, shape, color and etc. that we can worship in form. Vijnanam is knowledge of that absolute, formless, supreme God. When we have knowledge of the God with form and without form, then Krishna says you have knowledge of God in totality, which will lead you to direct moksha. So therefore chapter 9 comes back to emphasize on knowledge again, Jnanam. And then in verse number 2, which we covered last week also, there Krishna prays the glory of this knowledge, and he gave several what we call glories of this knowledge. It is Raja Vidya, Raja Guhya, which is the very title of this chapter. Raja Vidya means Raja is sovereign, Vidya is knowledge. It's sovereign knowledge, it is the highest knowledge. Beyond that there is no further thing to be known, because all other knowledge is only related to the perishable world. This is the only knowledge that tells you about the imperishable Lord. And it is also Raja Guhyam. It is a secret, sovereign secret, mainly because many people are not interested to pursue this knowledge. People are interested to worship the Lord with attributes, that is Jnanam. But very few people want to come to Vijnanam. So he says it remains a secret, very few people know about it. And then he says it is pavitram, it purifies us. Purifies means it removes ignorance from us. It removes all kinds of impurities from us, ego, greed, anger, jealousy, etc. And the biggest impurity in us is ajnanam or ignorance. Only knowledge can remove ignorance, just like only light can remove darkness. And so forth and so forth, he spoke about the glory of this knowledge. And then finally he said, who are the people who cannot get this knowledge? Those who are ashraddhadanaha. Shraddha is faith. Ashraddha means those who have no faith in this knowledge. Those who don't appreciate the value, the efficacy of this knowledge. How many people understand the value of this knowledge? So those who have no faith in this knowledge, are not going to attain this. And what happens to those people who have no faith in this higher knowledge? He says they will continue to rotate in the cycle of birth and death. So they will carry on rotating in the cycle of birth and death unless they come to knowledge. That means what? Knowledge is the only means to moksha. And then in verse number 4, he starts to speak directly about what is this knowledge he wants us to get. So the topic starts in verse number 4. And please keep in mind, what is the main topic? Ishvara Swarupam. What is the nature of God? This is what we want to know. What is the lower nature of God? What is the higher nature of God? So now Krishna is speaking about the higher nature of God, starting from verse 4. And what is the higher nature of God? He gave us few qualities here, verse 4. If you look at the second line, verse 4, the first quality he gave us was avyakta murtina. Look at the second line of verse 4. Avyakta murtina. Murtina means state. This Lord is unmanifest. Avyakta means unmanifest. That is the first nature of this God that we need to understand. So he's not talking about the God with attributes. He's talking about that Brahman who is without attributes, unmanifest. Avyakta murtina. Lord is formless. The higher nature of God is formless. And the second quality was given in the first line, Maya tatam idam sarvam jagat. Although this Lord is formless, without attributes, yet he tatam means he pervades. Pervades what? Sarvam idam jagat. This whole world he pervades. He is available here. He is all pervading. In every part of creation he is there. So that was the second quality. First was he is without attributes. Second, he is all pervading in this very creation. So when he says without attributes, what are we to understand from this? When he says the highest form of Lord has got no attributes, what are we to understand from this? When you say something has no attributes, means what? Right. Thus, what is the meaning to us?
A silent
goodness. Huh?
A silent goodness.
Meaning, when we say something without attributes, means our senses cannot recognize. Right? It is beyond the recognition of our senses. Because something has attributes, I can describe it to you. I can describe the color, the shape, the form. Therefore, the first thing you must understand that this highest form of God cannot be witnessed by our five senses. That means we need to use some other equipment to understand. Right? So, second was, he is all pervading. Third quality was given, Majtani Sarva Bhutani Nacha Aham Teshu Avastitaha. That is, first thing he said is, all beings exist in me, and then he said, I am not in them. So what he is trying to say here is that all creation has come from him. He is the very source, the very origin of this creation. This creation, not only God created, it came from him, but he is also all pervading this creation. So he says now, all beings exist in me, meaning all the creation is dependent upon me, but really speaking, I am not in them. Earlier he said what? I am all pervading. Now he is saying what? I am not in them. So what it means here is that just like all the ornaments are dependent on gold for their existence, gold is not dependent on ornaments for its existence. Just like the waves are dependent on the ocean, all waves come from the ocean, without ocean there are no waves, but the ocean is not dependent on the waves for its existence. So this is the meaning, that the whole creation is dependent on God for its existence, but God is not dependent on the creation. So without the creation, also God exists. Now we come to verse 5. In verse 5, he carries on giving some more qualities of this highest unmanifest God. Now again, some of the words, if we read in English, it contradicts what he says in verse 4, but as we understood last week, it is not contradicting. So now in verse 5, he says, Bhutani na majdani. In reality, he says, those beings exist not in me. What did he say in verse 4? All beings exist in me. Now he's saying, in reality, really speaking, they do not exist in me. And this we understood last week to be what? Like a dream. So just like the dream, when the waker in the waking state experiences the real world, the manifest world, in the dream state, the sleeper experiences the dream world. Is the dream world real or false? Is the dream world real or false? Is the dream world real or false? While the person is dreaming, it is very real. But from the standpoint of the dreamer, it is very real, isn't it? Because why? You see something scaring, you wake up shouting, you wake up screaming. So it's very, very real. But from the standpoint of the waker, it is not real. So similarly, this world is that's why it's called a maya, an illusion, because it is constantly changing. That's why it says, those beings exist not in me, meaning that it is a projection. It is a maya, it is an illusion. If we understand that what is this world, it is constantly changing, it is not permanent, then we are out of this illusion, then we say the world is not real. So that is the meaning, nacha matstani bhutani. And then he says, pashyame, pashyame yogam aishwaram. Pashyam means behold. Me yoga, my power, my divine aishwara means my divine power. What is Lord's divine power? His divine power is he creates, he sustains, and he dissolves the whole creation. That is the divine power of the Lord. So he said, this is my power that I can create, I also sustain, and at the same time when the whole creation is dissolved, it goes back to me, comes back to me. So meaning Lord is the substratum of the whole creation. But at the same time he says, Mama Atma Bhuta Bhavana Bhuta Brit. The Lord says that although my real nature is the creator, the sustainer and the dissolver, at the same time he says, what? This whole creation, in reality, he says what? In reality, I do not dwell in this creation. Again, there is some contradiction here when he says, I do not dwell in this creation. Because earlier he says what? I am all pervading in this creation. Now he says, I do not dwell in this creation. Again, how are we to understand this? The meaning is that although Lord is all-pervading in this creation, when the creation is destroyed, what happens to the Lord? It's still there. So simple example, clay is in all the pots. When the pots are destroyed, the clay still remains. Gold is in all the ornaments. When the ornaments are melted, gold still remains. So what he wants to say, I am not in them, meaning although I create, I sustain and I dissolve the whole creation. Whatever happens to the creation is changing, but God remains changeless. Through creation, through preservation, through destruction, God's nature never changes. So he says, look at my divine power. Although I do all this, I am also all-pervading, yet my nature remains as changeless. Okay, so all these qualities he has given us. Now in verse number 6, he carries on to explain more examples of what is the nature of this highest God, unmanifest, what we call Brahman. So now the fifth quality of God is given here. And the fifth quality is Asangatvam. Asangatvam means he is untainted. Because last verse Krishna said that he supports the whole universe, he is also in the universe. So we may wrongly understand that whatever impurities are there in this creation, those same impurities will also affect the Lord. So here Krishna says, I am asangatvam, means I am not tainted, I am not touched by what happens in this creation. So in order to help us understand this, he takes a beautiful example of space, akasha. Akasha is space. And many times in the Upanishads and even Shankara, they use either space or the sunlight to explain the nature of God. So here Krishna is using the example of space. And space and Brahman are very similar in terms of what we call in terms of quality. So what are the similar properties of Brahman and space? Number one, space is formless, isn't it? We cannot attribute a form to space. You cannot say space has got a triangle shape or a circular shape or a rectangle. Space is totally formless. What is Brahman? Brahman is also formless also. So that's why one of the reasons is easy to understand, because we want to understand the concept of Brahman. If we understand concept of space, we understand concept of Brahman. So first is space is formless, Brahman is formless. Second, space is all pervading. Everywhere there is space. There is nowhere where space does not exist. And what is Brahman also? All pervading. Everywhere Brahman is there. Third quality, space accommodates everything. Everything rests in space. Everything is supported by space. Similarly, Brahman also is the support of everything in creation. So similarity number three. Fourth similarity, although space accommodates everything, yet space is not burnt by fire. If you light a fire in space, space does not get affected. It does not get wet by water. Similarly, although Brahman accommodates everything, yet whatever happens in creation does not affect Brahman. A simple example given again to understand is the cinema screen. Cinema screen is white. On the cinema screen, you project the movie. If there is a war, there is crying, there is fire, there is whatever happens, there's rain. What happens? The screen remains untouched. Yet, why do we need the screen? So that we need to project the movie. Similarly, Brahman is there. We need Brahman because he is the creator, the sustainer, the destroyer. But whatever happens in this creation does not affect him. So again, space has got the similar qualities also. Space does not get tainted. In fact, in chapter 2, if you go back to verse 23, when Krishna was speaking about the qualities of the Atman, Atman and Brahman are one and the same. So in chapter 2, from verses 11 to 25, he was giving the qualities of Atman. One of the qualities he gave was in verse 23 on page 35. Chapter 2, verse 23, page 35. You look at verse 23. Weapons cannot cut it. Weapon cannot cut Atman. Fire cannot burn it. Water cannot drench it. Nor can wind make it dry. Because it is formless. It is like space. Right? So same example is used. Now, so here we come back to verse number 6 in chapter 9. So again, this is how when Upanishads especially want to explain something to you, they use a known example to explain to you something unknown. So if you look at the first line, the word yatha is used. Yatha means just as. Then in the third line, what do you find there? Tatha. Tatha means just as, like this, understand that also. So, giving you a known example, as this is known to be, that also is the same nature. So, what does he mean now? Yatha vayu, vayu is what? Wind. So, just as wind, what is the nature of wind? It is sarvatragaha. You see the word sarvatrago in the second line? Vayu sarvatrago, that means the nature of wind, it can move everywhere. That is the nature of wind. It moves here, it moves everywhere. Okay? So, just as the wind is always moving, and what about space? Akasha, in space, wind moves everywhere in space. But what is the nature of space? If you look at the word there in the second line, Mahan. Mahan means space is big, it is voluminous. Meaning what? Space is everywhere. So no matter where the wind moves, anywhere that the wind wants to move, what happens? Space is everywhere to accommodate the wind. And therefore he says, Sthitaha Nityam. Therefore, no matter where the wind moves, it is always present in space. If the wind is blowing here, it is supported by space. If it blows outside, it is supported by space. So, Nitya means always, Sthitaha means present. The wind will always be present or supported by space. So, this is an example, meaning what? Meaning, although space is stationary, it does not move. The wind can move wherever it wants, but doesn't matter wherever the wind moves, space is always there to support it. Okay. Secondly, the second what we call relationship between wind and space. The wind or the air can be foul or it can be fragrant. But whether it is a foul or fragrant wind that moves in space, it never affects the space. How do we know it never affects the space? That space is not tainted by the foul wind or the fragrant wind. How can we say that is true? Is it true or not? How can we say it is true or not? If there is a fragrance now, fragrant wind blowing here, how can we say it does not affect space? Huh? Limited, no. Okay, how can we say it does not affect space? Right. So what happens when the same wind moves the fragrance away to somewhere else? This space now has got no more fragrance. So the space can never be affected by fragrance or by foul smell. Because if space is affected, then even when the wind moves away, the space will still smell foul or fragrant. So that is the example he is giving us. It is, space can never be tainted by the wind. Therefore, he says now in the third line, tatha now meaning in the same way, if we understand that example, the relationship between space and wind, tatha, just like that, sarvani bhutani, sarvani all, bhutani creation, everything in creation. When he says everything in creation means what? Moving and not moving. Whether it is stationary or whether it is not stationary. Matstani exists in me. That means what? Just like wind, whether it is moving or stationary, it exists in space. This highest form of Brahman, which is all pervading, wherever there is creation, it is supported by that very Brahman also. This entire creation consisting of stationary or things in motion, everything is resting in this Brahman. But we must understand again the relationship between air and wind and space, that whatever is the nature of the wind, whether it is foul or whether it is fragrant, it cannot tame the space. Similarly, if we are good people, we are virtuous people, or we are people with vices, whether we have good karmas or bad karmas, whatever we think, whatever we do, does not affect this Brahman. It supports us, but it is not affected by our actions. So, then he ends this line by saying, Iti Upadharaya. Upadharaya means understand this very important fact, the relationship between Brahman and the world. By understanding the example of space and wind. So from this we can understand that although space is all-pervading, it is not affected by the wind. Similarly, although Brahman is all-pervading, he is the highest form of God, is not affected by the creation. Okay? Now we come to verse number 7. In verse number 7, now Krishna is going to reveal the role that God plays in creation. During all the three cycles of creation, maintenance and dissolution, what is God's role in this creation? So what we learn from chapter 7 and chapter 8, a very important fact, that this whole creation which is manifest, at the end of dissolution, what happens to the creation? It goes back into seed form or unmanifest form. Meaning what? All the karmas that we have done, all the actions that we have done, everything is not destroyed. Everything goes back into unmanifest form. Nothing is destroyed. So we must not say that dissolution means everything is totally gone. That means all my karmas are gone, I start refresh again from zero. No. Everything that we have done, every karma just goes back into unmanifest form. And when the whole world comes back to manifestation, what happens to all the karmas, everything that we have done? All are restarted again. Therefore, if you have 50 karmas there, you restart again with 50 again. So we must understand in dissolution, nothing is destroyed. Just like a huge tree, before it was a tree, it was a seed. From seed it became tree, from tree it goes back to seed and comes back to tree, and the cycle goes on and on. So this unmanifest creation is called Prakriti, as we understood in chapter 7. Prakriti is nothing but the raw material or the matter. It goes back into Prakriti stage. Or it is also called Maya. Maya, why? Because it is changing, always changing. So, Krishna says now this unmanifest comes into manifestation. How? The process of unmanifestation to manifestation and back again, this whole process goes on because of the power of God. That is the relationship of God with the world. He has the power to manifest. Understand, He doesn't create. The karmas are created by who? Created by us. He doesn't create the karmas, but He merely wakes up. He merely brings the creation into manifestation. So, now He says, Sarva Bhutani Prakatim Yanti Mamikam. Sarva Bhutani means the whole creation. Yanti, it goes back, when it goes back to unmanifestation, Yanti means to go back. And what is it when he goes back? He uses the word Prakatim. So when it is in the unmanifest stage, it is called Prakati. So here he says, if you look at the second line, Yanti Prakatim. And who does this Prakatim belong to, this unmanifest? He says, Mamikam. It also belongs to me. So Lord is also the ruler of the unmanifest state also. Right? So this unmanifest state is also dependent upon me also. Okay? And that is Lord's creation, how to bring back from manifest to unmanifest. Now just like a dream is dependent on who? On the waker, isn't it? Or the sleeper. If there is no sleeper, there is no dream. So So similarly, when everything goes back to unmanifest state, it is also the very power of God to take it back to unmanifest state. And when does this happen? If you look at the third line, kalpa chaye. Kalpa chaye means at the end of kalpa. Now in chapter 8, he told us what happens. 4.32 billion years, billion years, the whole creation exists. And then at the end of 4.32 billion years, the whole creation goes back into unmanifest state. How long does it go into unmanifest state? Another 4.32 billion years. When it is in manifest, it is called the day of Brahma. When it is unmanifest, it is called night of Brahma. Brahma goes to sleep. 4.32 billion years. When he awakens, it comes back into manifest state for another 4.32 billion. So this whole cycle has been going on and on and on. And what have we been doing? We also have been going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. But we are very fortunate. Why? Because we have now reached the human state now. And therefore, what should we do in this human form? Try to attain God or try to attain moksha. Because this is our biggest opportunity, the greatest opportunity that we have. If we fail to use this opportunity, then you do not know how many times again you are going to go on rotating and coming back again to the human form. So, kalpakshaye, at the end of the kalpa, everything goes back to the unmanifest state or seed state. And then what happens? He says in the last line, kalpa adav. The other one was kalpa kshaye, end of the kalpa. Now kalpa adav means the beginning of the next kalpa. What happens? Aham, that is God, says I visrajami. I project back the whole creation again. I merely project. So he's like the farmer who pours the water on the seed, puts the fertilizer and brings it back again into manifestation. And thus in verse number 8 he carries on. What happens now? This is just, he's just talking about one cycle. But does it just mean one cycle? So no, because in verse number 8 he uses the word in the second line. If you see, punaha punaha, again and again the same thing has been going on and on and on. So, the word punaha, punaha, repeated means it has been endlessly going on. Therefore, in our Hinduism, we cannot tell when is the beginning of the world. Nobody can predict when this cycle even started also. Therefore, it is no point for us to waste, because whenever we talk about this subject, everybody gets so excited and asks when the creation started, why the creation started, this and that and all question. What should we be asking ourselves? How to get out of the cycle. Because if we try to imagine everything about the creation, why it started, when it started, so much of mind-boggling question, the most important question we want to know is how to get out of the cycle. That is what is the important point for us to know. So, again and again, what do I do? The word visrajami is there. Project. Again and again, I keep on projecting. It's an eternal cycle. Aham visrajami. So, it is like a circle. In a circle, you cannot tell where is the beginning, where is the end. And what he says, but when he projects, he also says this in the first line, prakatim swam avastabhya. This prakati, this maya, which is in raw material form, when he projects it, he keeps it under his control. Now, what do you mean by he keeps it under his control? Meaning he only has the power to project the creation. And very important, as I want to repeat again, he does not create anything new, he merely brings it back into manifestation. So all the existing vasanas, the punyam, the papam, everything is not exhausted, it is not destroyed, it comes back into manifestation. And
it's
Satya Yuga, I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's a good question, because when Kali Yuga ends, everything goes back and restarts again with Satya Yuga. But not necessarily everybody who ends Kali Yuga as human form is going to come back in Satya Yuga as human form. Because again, it depends on your own vasanas also. And when you are born, what time you are born, which family you are born, everything depends again on your individual karmas also. Right? So now here Krishna says, Imam Krishnam Bhuta Gramam. Bhuta means all the created things. Gramam means the multitude of all created things. Because not only human beings, but plants, insects, everything in creation. Gramam means multitude of things. Krishnam means in totality, all the gross forms, moving, non-moving forms, all comes into manifestation. How? The very important word here is in the last line, avasham, helplessly. We are all, we do not have a choice to choose the body we want to be born, where we want to be born, in what situation we want to be born. We are helplessly just pushed forward into manifestation. Due to what? Due to our own karmas and vasanas. So avasham means helplessly. Neither God will also change the destiny for us, neither we ourselves can also dictate in what situation we want to be born. So this is important to understand. It is avasha, it is beyond our control. But actually it is also due to our own action. So we are going to reap what we have sown. So avasha, under the influence of what? Prakriti, this maya, whatever is in the seed form, helplessly it just projects into the manifested world. Now, therefore, as I said, we want to get out of this cycle. That is what's most important. We understand that we've been going around this cycle multitude and multitude of times. So, that's why it's very important for us to understand the value of Atma Jnana, this knowledge. Once we understand, we have value for this knowledge, but we need to understand and attain this knowledge. Once we attain this knowledge, we understand the secret of how to get out of this cycle. That's why he calls it Raja Guhyam. It is the greatest secret for us to understand how to get out of this cycle. So now, he explains further on this, verse 9. He gives us some more description of this Ishvara. And here, he is giving us a clue also how to get out of the cycle of creation also. By describing his very own, God's very own nature, in this verse number 9, he also is giving us a clue how to get out of this cycle of birth and death. The important point that is to be noted from this verse is that it is not the action that binds us, but what is it? It is the thought or the motive behind the action that binds us. Therefore, whatever your action is, what we have to understand is the motive is a very important factor. The motive is the one that creates the further karmas. It is these karmas that keep us rotating. So if we want to dissolve these karmas, we have to understand the right motives. So here now, earlier Krishna said that I am the creator, I am the destroyer, I am the sustainer. That means God also is doing all the actions. But what is the difference now? Here he says, he addresses Arjuna as Dhananjaya. Dhananjaya is another name for Arjuna. He says, Tani karmani. Tani means those karmani, those actions. What actions? Creation, dissolution, sustenance. All the actions I do, na nibhatnati. Na nibhatnanti, if you look at the second line there, na nibhatnanti means those actions that I am doing, they do not bind me, they do not affect me, they do not create a karmic debt. Whereas actions that we do because of our ignorance creates a new karma, continuous karma is created. So all these actions that Lord does not bind him. There is no punyam, there is no papam for Lord. Why? He explains this. In the second line, he says that, if you look at the last line, Teshu karmashu asaktam. Teshu, of those actions which I do, karmashu is actions, asaktam, the attitude is what? Unattachment. Total detachment. So, what do we mean by total detachment? God says every action I do is with asaktam, with total detachment. That's why the actions do not bind me. So here's a very formula for the secret how to not let the actions create a new karma. The secret is asaktam, that is what we call unattachment. Now what do we mean by unattachment? The key here is that every action we do, there is what is called a kartritva abhimana. Kartritva abhimana means the ego of doership. We always claim that I am doing this action because of this, because of my action this has succeeded. I only raise my family, I only sacrifice everything. That sense of doership is the one that binds us. So ego is the most powerful thing to destroy. That's why it is one of the most powerful thing, and ego comes with only one with one situation. When we identify with something, this body is mine, this house is mine, this car is mine, that sense of identification is what creates the ego. Therefore I always consider my possessions, my body, my family. Now if we think about it a little bit more, this body, did you have a choice when you were born? Did you choose, I wanted hair like this, I want nose like this, eye like this, skin like this? Did you have a choice? So why did you get this body? Not by your choice. Why did you get this body? Due to your past karmas. Therefore, due to your past karmas, why were you given this body? To exhaust your papam and punyam. Therefore, first of all, you didn't have a choice when you wanted to be born, how you wanted to be born, with what body. Therefore, we should understand the body has been leased to us. It does not belong to us. It has been leased to us from a date of birth to a date of death. And like lease, anything that you lease, God has leased you this body, and He doesn't have to give you 3 months notice to take it away. He can cancel the lease anytime. And at the same time, not only this body, the family you have, the possessions you have, whatever money, possessions, fame, wealth, name you have, everything has come to you because of the law of karma. So what should be our attitude with everything that we have, including this body? No attachment with what? All these things have been given to me for a temporary period to be used to exhaust my punyam and papam, to do my duty and consider myself as an instrument in the hands of the Lord. So there is no more sense of ego. There is no more sense of doership. O Lord, this body is an instrument in your hands and I will do as per thy bidding. I will do my duty, I will serve my family. And that's why you must understand, when people say detachment, there is a difference between attachment and love. What is the difference between attachment and love? When we say detachment, they say, should I not love my family? There's a difference between love and attachment. What is the difference? Attachment comes with expectations, whereas love should be unconditional. And that's why also Shankara says very beautifully in one of his writings, he says, understand that all the family members that you have in your life, did you have a choice to choose who are your children? In fact, you think you had a choice to choose your spouse, but actually you don't have a choice also. So everything has come into your life. Shankara describes it very beautifully as all of us traveling in a train. Now in India, sometimes the trains go on a 2 to 3 day journey, right? Long journey, 2 to 3 days. Now what happens in a 2 to 3 day journey? You are sitting in a train compartment. You are going from point A to point B. In this train compartment, somebody gets on. And they also spend 2 days with you on the train. What do? You start talking to them. You form a relationship with them. You may share some food with them. You share some stories with them. What happens when that person has reached his destination? He has to get down. He doesn't sit with you and accompany you all the way to your destination. That means what? All the family members have come into your life is like a railway compartment. You meet each other for a specific period of time, but everybody has got his origin and his destination. So everybody has got to board the train at their own time and get off the train at their own time. All of us have a different destiny. We only come for a short period of time to be with each other, to interact with each other, but that doesn't mean we should get attached with each other. Because we must understand, everybody has got their own journey to make. So what should we do? We should do our duty to the family. We should love our family. But we should not get attached or have any expectation. Why? Because each of them have got their own journeys to go to. So that's why once we understand what is our role we play, then we don't get disturbed. So ego, that's what Krishna says, asaktam. Identification. Ego always comes with identification. Nothing belongs to us. Everything has come due to the law of karma. Understand that. You don't have any control when it comes, when it goes. So what can you do? Do your best, do your duty, do it with detachment. And same also all our possessions. Whatever money we have, whatever fame, name we have, use it how to do your duty and how to help others. So Krishna says here further in this verse, Udasino Asinam. Udasino means, Asina means I am seated. Udasina means as though I am unconcerned. Now the word Udasina Vad, here unconcerned does not mean I am indifferent, I don't care whatever happens, no. Here means I am unaffected by the outcome. That means I understand that this is a law of karma. What is happening is a law of karma. What is coming is a law of karma. Maximum I can do is pray to Lord, as the beautiful prayer is, Lord, give me the strength to change what I can change. Give me the courage to face what I cannot change, because there are things we cannot change. So what you can change, give me the strength to change. Give me the courage to face what I cannot change. And more important, give me the wisdom to know the difference between what I can change and what I cannot change. Because all the life we are trying to make changes to things also we cannot change. So we should have the wisdom to understand what I can change, change, what I cannot change, I got to face that situation. So unaffected means being detached and understanding the law of karma also. Renounce that ego, the sense of doership. So not renounce actions, that's why very important to understand. It is not actions to be renounced. Because if Krishna wanted actions to be renounced, what would he have told Arjuna? Don't fight, go away from battlefield, go and take sannyas. But what did he tell Arjuna? Go and fight. But surrender the results to me. Not surrender your actions, surrender the results to me. So unconcerned. And there's a beautiful prayer by Saint Augustine. He says, pray as though everything depends on God. Pray as though everything depends on God. O Lord, it is your will, let your will be done. But work as though everything depends on you. So put in the effort. Work as though everything depends on me. I put in the effort, I do my duty. But when I pray, everything depends on you. That means what? Action is my role, result is in the hands of the Lord. So Krishna says that's why the most important is removing this sense of egoship, remaining detached. And thus Krishna says, so he is giving now his relationship with him and the world. And also the example of light is always given. Under this light, we can do variety of transactions. Some of you are reading the Gita, some of you are listening to me, some of you are having a sound sleep. Everything you can do under this light. But the light does not dictate your actions, and whatever you do does not affect the light. Yet, why do we need the light? Without light, we cannot perform any action. So God provides the consciousness, God provides the support for the action, but He does not dictate your action, neither do our actions affect Him also. But without God, we cannot perform any actions also. So here in this next verse 10, He explains that also. Look at the first line. Maya adhyakshena. Adhyakshena means by my proximity. Because God is all pervading in this creation, so He says, by my presence in this creation. Now when Krishna says by my presence, who is this me? It's not the Krishna form me, it is the Brahman. It is the all pervading Brahman. So you must be very careful when Krishna says, under my guidance, under my presence, does not mean Krishna, it means the all-pervading consciousness. So, which is the higher nature of Lord, not the lower nature, but the higher nature. So, what does he say? Prakati suyate. So, in the first and second line, you can see prakati suyate. Prakati is a basic matter, again, as I said. This basic matter functions when there is a presence of Lord. This matter functions. So matter is inert, it has no life. This body has got no life. It can only function when there is the presence of Lord there. So he says this prakriti functions. And just like, how can we understand this? If the bulb is there but there is no electricity, the bulb cannot function. So this prakriti can only function because of Lord's presence. Now, but yet we must understand one thing. He says matter functions because of my presence. But how it functions depends on who? He says in my presence matter functions. The body functions because of the presence of Lord. But what you do, what you think, what you do, your actions depends on who? Depends on your guna. Right? So if mind is sattvic, supposing your mind is sattvic, what will happen? You will have sattvic thoughts. These sattvic thoughts will be blessed by Lord. Now simple example, if the bulb is white, electricity is in the white bulb, what does the bulb shine with what color? White. If you change the bulb to red color, same electricity is there. Now, what color does the bulb shine with? Red color. Electricity is the same, but you have one white bulb, red bulb, yellow bulb. So similarly, he says, if your mind is sattvic, I will bless you. Your thoughts are sattvic, not because of God's blessings, because of your gunas. So if your mind is rajasic, you will have selfish thoughts. It is the same consciousness that also blesses you also. So your thoughts, your actions have nothing to do with God. He is just there to bless you as a silent witness. Whether you have good thoughts or selfish thoughts or you have tamasic thoughts has got nothing to do. Just because God is there doesn't mean we all behave in the right way. As God is present in all of us, but in evil men also God is present, in the saint also the same consciousness also is present. Now we can see the same thing he said in chapter 5 verse 14. We go back to chapter 5 verse 14, which is on page 105. Chapter 5 verse 14, page 105. The Lord determines neither the doership nor the doings of beings, nor even their union with the fruit of action. Whatever result you are getting is based on your own action. There is no third party to blame. Why my life is like this or whatever you are going through, there is no other party to blame but yourself for your past action. So neither does it determine what action you do, neither will it determine what is the result of your action. Everything is determined by the law of karma. But what karma to be given in which life, how many punyam, how many papam, that he determines. That's why he is called karma phala data. So he will allocate in this life how many good things, how many bad things you have to go through. But what are the punyam and papam that you have to go through is dependent on your own action. So coming back to this verse now, he says, I merely bless this creation with consciousness. And when he means creation, he also is, wants to point out the word there in the second line, verse 10, sachara chara. Chara and achara, meaning he is blessing everything that is moving and non-moving. So he is in the rocks, he is also in the trees, he is also in human beings, he is also in animals and insects. Now therefore you should not ask me the question now, why rocks don't move. I hope you have sufficiently understood this point. How many of you still don't understand that? We say the consciousness is in human beings, so we are moving, we are thinking, right? We are talking. That same consciousness now is saying also sachara charam, is in chara and achara, in moving and non-moving. So by now you should not ask the question, if then God is also in rocks, why don't rocks move? Why don't they talk also? Why don't trees also function? So I hope this is very clear, because I still see some confusion there. Okay, so we have already covered this before, right? So he is in moving and non-moving things, from the minute atoms right to the gigantic mountains and elephants, everywhere he is there. And thus he says, Hetuna anena, because of this presence, because of this consciousness, okay, Jagat, the whole world, viparivartate, it is constantly changing, it is constantly moving. So because of the presence of the Lord, the whole universe is in vibration, it is constantly changing also. So the sun, the moon, the stars, they revolve. Why do they revolve? Why do they move? Because of the power of Lord also there. So he is the support of the whole creation. So here basically these verses are very important, because they are telling us the knowledge which is from the Upanishads. The Upanishads talk about Jagat, Jiva, Ishvara. Ishvara, God, Jagat, the world creation, and Jiva means the individual. So what is the relationship between these three? This is what is being explained in this chapter also. Okay. Now, in the previous verse, Krishna has concluded the description of Ishvara Swarupam. So that matter has ended. What is the nature of God? What is his relationship with the world and his creation, and how he is the silent witness? Now, therefore, whatever merits and demerits that is happening to our own life is due to our own karmas. We alone are responsible. But what we must understand, then people will ask, then why pray to the Lord? If that karma is going to happen, why pray to the Lord then? What difference is it going to make?
It's like medicine. If you have pain, okay.
Right. Don't feel the pain so much. So prayer helps to neutralize our papa. We must understand, prayer is also an action, and every action produces a equal reaction. So when there is a certain adverse situation going on in your life, it doesn't mean that you don't pray. When you pray, that prayer also is a good action that can neutralize that papa. But one thing we must understand, that you cannot, sometimes we pray and nothing happens. That solution, that problem still goes on, it persists. So prayer you do for 1 minute. You cannot expect to neutralize that papa which you have done for 10 years, isn't it? Right. So sometimes what does it tell us? Papam has been going on for several lifetimes. Right. So much of papam, the strength of that papam is so strong, we cannot neutralize it with 1 minute of prayer. So sometimes, no doubt, we pray. If prayer fails, we must understand that the papam was too powerful to be neutralized by our prayer. So this is what we must understand. Yeah, so it depends again on how much of power we have in our prayer and how much is the power of that papa also on us, right? So sometimes it is neutralized, sometimes it is not neutralized. And this is where, that's why the most important is we have to understand the problems of samsara. Until we understand the nature of samsara, the reason why all these problems are happening. Number one, it is our own ignorance. What is our ignorance? We expect permanence from impermanent. World is impermanent, people are impermanent, emotions are impermanent. Today you say I love you, tomorrow I don't love you. There is nothing that is permanent. But yet we expect what? Permanence from impermanent. So whose wrong expectation is that? Our own wrong expectation. So thus we suffer. Number two, we expect security from the insecure. World itself is changing, but we expect to find security in that which is insecure. Again, it is due to our wrong expectation. Third, we expect purnatvam. Purnatvam is what? We want infinite anandam. I want to be happy 24/7. We want purnatvam, which is not purnatvam. Nobody says I only want to be happy Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You want happiness when? Monday through Sunday, January through December. And if there's a leap year, also add in February 29 also. So we expect purnatvam from where? What is apurna, which is infinite. So all this wrong expectation, if you are seeking security, purnatvam and permanence, in which direction should you be seeking? Towards God or within us? Both, either towards God or within us, because that is the only thing that is purnatvam. So you should go towards the higher nature of God, that is para prakriti, which is permanent, which is purnatvam, which can give you anandam. But what Krishna wants to say here, nobody understands or nobody is interested to come to this purnatvam. All the while we are seeking God for what? What is in this world, which is changing. Knowing it is changing, knowing it is finite, we carry on seeking the same thing. And thus we come back to our own problems again. So Krishna says, this confusion the majority of people have. And he wants to wake us up by using very, very harsh words. So what is the harsh word he uses here? Here in verse number 11. Verse number 11. Mudaha. Foolish people. Very strong, very harsh words. Confused people, ignorant people. Why ignorant? Why confused? Because they are unable to differentiate between what is nityam and anityam. What is real and unreal? Right? You don't have that power of discrimination to understand what is changing and what is non-changing. You seek that permanence in the changing world, you cannot understand what is the difference in that. So you cannot understand what is the difference between the lower nature and the higher nature of God. So he says here, mama param bhavam ajanantaha. Mama param, my supreme bhavam, my supreme nature, which is unmanifest, which is the para prakriti, which is the only source of security, permanence and happiness, he says ajanantaha, these mudaha, these foolish people, they do not know. They don't want to come to that understanding. They don't care to know about my higher nature. So, the thing is, no doubt we are born ignorant. Okay? To be born ignorant is not our fault. But what is our biggest fault? We are born ignorant, okay, we don't have that knowledge. Okay, we can't help it, we are born ignorant. But what is the problem? We don't seek the knowledge. So we waste that opportunity, we die ignorant, that is our biggest mistake. To be born ignorant is not a mistake, but to die ignorant, that is a greater mistake. Because we don't use that opportunity to get out of our ignorance. So, not only are we ignorant about spiritual matters, but also of even worldly things. So, if we don't work to remove the ignorance, and we remain in ignorance, that is the biggest sin that we are perpetuating on our own self. Having given that opportunity to remove the ignorance, we don't use that opportunity. There is a very famous poet, he wrote very nicely, Rumi, his name is Rumi, a Sufi poet. He wrote, "Yesterday I was clever, so I wanted to change the world. Yesterday I was clever, so I wanted to change the world. Today I am wise, so I am changing myself." So we are trying to be too clever to change everything in the world. But when we are wise, we understand we have to change ourselves to deal with that world. Because the world is constantly changing. You cannot stop it. It is constantly changing. So ignorance of the higher nature of God. Why? Because we don't put in any effort to remove this ignorance. Right? And everything is available to us. The teachers are there, the Swamijis are there, the books are there, opportunities are there, but we don't make use of it. So he says what now? Manushim tanu ashritam. They think about, they can only understand me as ashritam, one who has taken manushim tanu. Manushi means human, tanu means body. So the only concept of Lord we can understand is someone in a human body. Not realizing that it is actually the higher nature of God who has taken this body, their level of understanding is this is the nature of God. They cannot think beyond that. So that is the lower nature of God that we pursue as Krishna form or Ganesha form or Devi form. These are all lower nature, finite nature, Manushim Tanum. And he calls his people foolish people. Now it is not that we should not worship this form, but the form is only a starting point. That is what is going to be made clear in these chapters. To start with the form is a starting point, but we should not end with the form. So worshipping a form is not wrong, but then not coming to the higher understanding of Lord, that is our main problem. So thus he says, avajanati mam. Avajanati means they do not understand me, the higher form, the real form, the one which is pervading beyond all forms. So even great sages like Shankara also, it's not that they did not worship form. He worshipped the form of Lord Shiva. Ramana Maharishi worshipped Kali Devi, right? So all of them did worship form, but they understood that beyond this form there is a bigger consciousness. So it is not that it is wrong to worship, but what he is trying to say is that one should move on also, right? And thus, what is the higher form of Lord? The Nirgunam form, he says, who is the Bhuta Maheshwaram. Maheshwaram, there are two words, Maha Ishwara. Maha means great, Ishwara means Lord or controller. Who is the Lord of all the Bhuta, meaning all the creation, all the creatures in creation. So this is the highest form of Lord. But this is what the Mudaha or the foolish people do not know. And this is what causes our problems in samsara. Until we don't come to understand the higher nature of God. So now in the next verses from 12 to 19, he is going to explain about the different types of people. One who do not understand his higher form, and another type of people who have understood his divine nature. So two different types of people he will talk about from verses 12 to 19. So one, Krishna describes a type of people who approach the problem sensibly. They have diagnosed the problem of samsara. They have understood the right direction of life. they don't depend on this impermanent world, but they seek permanence from the Lord. And those who have not diagnosed the problem, the second type of people, those who have wrong thinking, and unfortunately they don't learn from their experiences, they depend on the perishable world. So what happens now? Throughout our life, one finite dependence is replaced by another finite dependence. As a youth, you chase the bicycle, you want bicycle, that makes you happy. Then when you grow up, you give up the bicycle, then you chase the motorcycles. Then motorcycle makes you happy, after a while you got your car license, then from motorcycle you give up, you chase the car. And you go on and go on and on. You drop one finite happiness for another finite happiness. So these two type of devotees Lord wants to contrast. So now, in this verse number 12, he talks about those type of devotees who are the mudaha, who are devoid of discrimination. In verse number 12, confused people. What does he say now? Now, when we look at verse number 12, one thing we must understand, that all our human pursuits, whatever we pursue, has got three stages. The first is janati, that is, you must have knowledge of something. So first is, you have knowledge of a goal, that is something that you have set your mind on, that's a goal. Then there is ichchati, there is a desire for that goal. Because you might know many things, but you may not have desire for them. So one is, first is janati, that you have knowledge of a goal. Second is, then you must have a desire to reach that goal, that is ichchati. The third is, what is the third? You have knowledge, you have desire to reach that goal. What is the third? That is yatate, you must try to attain that goal. So in whatever human pursuits we have, there is knowledge, janati, there is ichchati, there is desire for that goal, and there is yatate, that is, you strive to attain that goal. Therefore, what does it tell us? Knowledge leads to desire. Desire leads to action. Knowledge leads to desire. Desire leads to action. Right? So this is what is called in our scriptures as Jnana Shakti, Ichha Shakti and Kriya Shakti. Jnana Shakti is knowledge, Ichha Shakti is desires, Kriya Shakti is action. These three components are very important for whatever we want to achieve in our life also. Therefore, all pursuits begin with the knowledge. Now, what happens if I don't have proper understanding of the world? There is a world, but I don't have a proper understanding. That means my knowledge is defective. I don't have proper understanding about what are the goals of life. I'm not talking about material goals. I'm talking about spiritual goals. If I don't have an understanding of the world, I don't have understanding of God, if I don't have an understanding about this human life, what is the goal of human life? That means what? My knowledge is? Knowledge is defective. If my knowledge is defective, what happens to my actions? My actions also will be wrong. So therefore, why is knowledge so important? Once you don't have proper knowledge, then you have wrong desires and you do the wrong actions. So everything can be corrected with the right knowledge. So thus, why study of the scriptures is important? Study of the scriptures is important for one reason, to set the right direction in life. Wrong knowledge, wrong knowing leads to wrong doings. So that's why first knowledge is so important. And if the knowledge is improper, the desires will be improper. If desires are improper, my actions are also improper. And what is the result of improper action? Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam. Right? So there is a beautiful saying in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Sa yatha kamo bhavati. तत् ख्रातुर भवति, यत् ख्रातुर भवति तत् कर्म कुरुते, यत् कर्म कुरुते तत् अभिसंपद्यते। व्हाट इट मीन्स सिंपली, सह यथा कामो भवति, कामो मीन्स डिजायर, एज योर डिजायर तत् ख्रातुर भवति, सो इज द विल ऑफ द पर्सन, द डिजायर डिसाइड्स द विल ऑफ द पर्सन। यत् ख्रातुर भवति एज योर विल तत् कर्म कुरुते, दैट विल लीड टू योर एक्शन। यत् कर्म कुरुते एज पर योर एक्शन तत् अभिसंपद्यते, दैट विल बी द कॉन्सिक्वेंस और रिजल्ट ऑफ योर एक्शन। सो देयरफॉर दिस कॉन्फ्यूज पीपल दैट कृष्णा इज टॉकिंग अबाउट इन दिस वर्स हैव द रॉन्ग नॉलेज, दस दे हैव रॉन्ग डिजायर, thus they put in the wrong actions and thus they get the wrong results. So what does he say about these people? You look at the second line, the word there, vichetasa. Vichetasa means senseless people. Senseless people means what? Those who don't use their intellect to gain this knowledge, whose sattva guna is overpowered by rajas and tamas. So one who has very strong rajasic and tamasic gunas, very weak sattvic gunas, senseless people, even though all the gurus are there, the scriptures are there, but because of our arrogance sometimes we don't want to listen, or because our lack of interest or so, ego, whatever it is, we don't make any effort to get this knowledge. And there is a beautiful verse given in the Mundaka Upanishads. You know, and we see this example now. The Mundaka Upanishad says that these senseless people are like the blind following the blind. You know, like one person who has the money and the power, he does like that, whatever, these people want to follow him. So he is already going in the wrong direction. These people are also following in the wrong direction. What is it? It is a blind being led by the blind. If the blind are following the blind, what will happen to everybody? All will fall down in the ditch somewhere, isn't it? Because that fellow cannot see. So this is what happens basically, why we are told to be in a good company of people, in the right company of people. Otherwise we are foolishly following the example set by these people who themselves are devoid of any discrimination. In fact, these very people who are consider themselves the very hip people, the happening people, are the very same people who look down upon spiritual people. They say, you are wasting your time. Right? So here he says, what are these foolish people? If you look at the second line, moga jnana. Jnana means these people's knowledge is moga, it is vain. They've got the wrong understanding and expectations about life. Their knowledge itself is vain knowledge. They have wrong expectations. What do we mean by wrong expectations? What do we mean by wrong expectations? What type of wrong expectations can these people have? Right, it's the external that brings happiness. As I said earlier, expecting impermanent, expecting permanence from the impermanent, expecting security from the insecure, expecting purnatvam from the apurnatvam. These are basically the wrong expectations. That means what? Power, position, money, all this will remain permanently. Their expectations are wrong. So they seek security from insecure, permanence from impermanent. And what will this lead to if they have wrong knowledge? So look back at the first line. Moga asa. There's moga and asa. Earlier was moga jnana. Their knowledge, their expectations were wrong. So what will it lead to? Moga asa. Asa means hopes or desires. Because their expectations are wrong, their desires also are wrong. They pursue their happiness and security from the wrong direction, futile desires. And if their desires are wrong, what happens? Look at the first line, the second word. Moga karmanaha. Your actions also are wrong. Thus, wrong knowledge, leading to wrong desires, leading to wrong actions. Never ending pursuit of finite things. Those who have multiple desires, who are driven by desire, driven by ego, driven by lust, by greed, etc. Why?
And all the knowledge that Ravana
has,
all the different colors.
Right.
But he had,
he had also?
He had the lust.
Yeah, that the wrong qualities also are there, no doubt. You see, that's why I spoke about gross knowledge and subtle knowledge. There's a gross intellect and a subtle intellect. Gross knowledge, the person can be the most intelligent person in the world. He can know everything about the material world. But when it comes to spiritual knowledge, then that understanding is very different. And furthermore, if one also reads the scriptures with an ego, you may have all the knowledge of the scriptures, you may be able to quote left and right from the scriptures, but because you have that arrogance, you don't really understand the real nature. That's why one person went to Swami Chinmayananda. He told Swami Chinmayananda, he said, I have gone through the Gita 30 times. 30 times I have gone through the Gita, Swamiji. So what did Chinmayananda say? He said, it is wonderful, my son, that you have gone through the Gita 30 times. But has the Gita gone through you? So you may have gone through the scriptures, but that doesn't mean that you have absorbed the teachings of the scriptures. So people like Ravana, the egos there, they were knowledgeable people. He had knowledge of the Vedas, the scriptures, but because of that ego, he could not accept things also. So knowledge has got to be also put into practice. So moga karmana, actions also are wrong. Knowledge is wrong, desires are wrong, leading to wrong actions. And as desires and greed and all drives them more and more, then what happens? They take to what he says there, third line, Rakshasim Asurim Prakatim Asritaha. These people, Asritaha means they possess, what do they possess? Prakatim meaning the nature. What is their nature? Rakshasim and Asurim. So, two different types of nature. What is the difference between Rakshas and Asurim? We will come back next week and discuss. Okay? So, this is the very nature of these people, Rakshas and Asurim. How do they become Rakshas and Asurim? We will come back and discuss. We began with the prayer.
Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kansa Chanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru.
Thank you. Bit too early, isn't it? I think maybe my next week can along. Are you